Good morning. Good morning. I will relate briefly to the texts that you studied and to certain problems which they seem to raise. At the end, you have certain quotations from contemporary scholars, and for instance, on the last page, which I don't know if you got to, you have two quotations. The last one from the Chazon Ish, who is a perhaps the most venerated scholar and rabbi of what is now the ultra-Orthodox community in Israel, writes about conversion. It seems that conversion is only for him who basically believes that God, through his prophet, commanded laws and ordinances to the people of Israel, separating them from the nations, and told them that they could receive proselytes from all nations through circumcision, immersion, and acceptance. The proselyte will thereby enter the Torah of the Jewish people, including all its past and future generations. Yet, if he does not believe all this and undertakes to behave according to the laws of the Torah because he finds it useful or profitable, this is not acceptance of conversion. Above that, we find that what is required is that somebody really intends to observe the laws or the rulings of how to behave, which is a different stress because, according to the person above, a response of Beit Yitzchak, if somebody sincerely accepts to follow the laws of Torah, then what he or she believes about God and how the Torah came to be and so on is irrelevant. Before that, we have Rabbi Moses Feinstein, who says, well, the important thing is that the person intends to do what the Jews do, even if she really doesn't know enough about that and has major mistakes. And earlier we have Rabbi Uziel, earlier in the text, all these people are more or less living in the same time framework, who says that it's really irrelevant whether a person intends to observe the commandments of Torah, and that conversion works perfectly well without a person. In fact, if a person knowingly does not intend to follow the rules, they can also be a convert. However, when we go to earlier texts, we find that, if anything, the commandments are even less stressed. In the Talmudic text, which is the most extensive text about conversion to Judaism, we see that there are many things that the person is told about. He or she is told nothing about God, about any theological beliefs at all. They're told about the situation of the Jewish people. They're told about some of the commandments. And then there's a certain ceremony which, for a man, involves circumcision and immersion. For a woman, I'm happy at least, it does not involve circumcision, but only immersion. And after this ceremony, he is like an Israelite in all respects. In Talmudic discussions about which of these aspects of conversion is actually the core or absolutely necessary for a conversion to be efficacious, what we find is that circumcision or immersion are advocated by Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, who lived in the first century of the Common Era. But the sages, that is apparently the other rabbis of the time, said if he immersed but was not circumcised, or if he was circumcised but did not immerse, he is not a convert until he is circumcised and has immersed. None of them in Talmudic literature, and in fact in several hundred years after, seem to feel that in any way knowledge of the commandments, being informed of the commandments, or certainly committing oneself to observe the commandments, is a necessary part of the ceremony. And even in the full-blown ceremony as described, there's no theology and only partial description of the commandments, which makes some of this more modern stuff, in fact, seem anomalous. And the question which I would like to raise then, or in fact which Avi Sagi and I in our work came to realize after going through this material, is how is it possible to understand or present a rationale for the conversion procedure or ceremony as it exists in the classic texts, and as, for instance, Rabbi Uziel and other rabbis not quoted here in modern times continue to hold, namely that performance of commandments and, to a great extent, theology is not the focus of the event? What other possible rationale can be given for this? I will say at the outset of something which some of you may have thought during the discussion, that the whole possibility of conversion in the sense of somebody who is not born a Jew to in any way then become a Jew is not at all self-evident that this should be possible. Why? Because if we take people who are not converts, people who were Jews, naturally, as it were, we're all talking about convention and culture, but naturally, as it were, we see that people are Jews basically in the Bible and in post-biblical times, and strangely enough, even in rabbinic Judaism to this day, by birth. And a person is Jewish by birth, according to most, to all Jewish denominations until 1983, and since then, according to the Orthodox and conservative and many of the Reformed Jews not living in the United States, it has to do with the Jewish mother. If a person's mother is Jewish, then whoever her father or his father was is irrelevant, and the person is Jewish by birth. And all authorities agree, including the most extreme ultra-Orthodox people that you can find, that such a person, however they subsequently behave, is a Jew. Okay? If a person who is born Jewish, and this is the mainstream approach, it's very hard to find people who will, in any generation of rabbis who held otherwise, if somebody was born to a Jewish mother, whoever their father was, and they then decided to become Christians or Buddhists because they acknowledged the truth of Buddha and so on, and they lived their entire lives as Buddhists, okay, that's how they see themselves, that's how Buddhists may see themselves, that's how 99% of the people in the world may see themselves, but according to the perception of the Jewish tradition, these people are Jews who are not living as Jews should. So the person's belief system or life patterns do not affect according to this view, which, as I said, is the conventional mainstream Jew of all view of all branches of Judaism, does not affect their Jewishness. It therefore would seem very reasonable that if you took the flip side of this argument, you would say then if a person was born non-Jewish, whatever they did and whatever they may believe and however they may behave afterwards, this should also not affect that identity, because if identity is something that a person is born into, then that's who you are. It's an ascriptive status, as a sociologist would say, and it's not something that's related to choice. Strangely, there is such a procedure under which a person who was not born to a Jewish mother becomes a Jew. And what's more, once again, according to the Talmud and according to the vast majority of rabbis and sages throughout the generations, once that happens, they're in the same boat as the other Jews, meaning that whatever they do from now on is irrelevant to their Jewish status. And this is hinted at in the text on the first page that you accepted, towards the bottom. When he emerges from the immersion, He is like an Israelite in all respects. And in the ensuing Talmudic discussion, the rabbis say, what does this mean, he is like an Israelite in all respects? And they expressly say that this means that if that person then decides to return to the lifestyle and non-Jewish faith and community into which they were born, or into any other faith community, they, just like a person who was born to a Jewish mother, are considered by Jews as Jews. This text, in fact, is one of the sources that rabbis rely upon when saying that somebody who was born to a Jewish mother could never be anything but Jewish. You say, if this is true of somebody who chose Judaism, that once having gone through the conversion procedure, they can be nothing but Jewish however they behave, all the more so it must be true of somebody who was born to a Jewish mother. So this procedure or process puts somebody who is not born to Jewish parentage or to Jewish ancestry or whatever in much the same position for most intents and purposes as somebody who was born into the Jewish community. And in both cases, in the classic construction, this has very little to do with theology and lifestyle. Does this mean that Jews, according to Jews, should behave however they wish? No. That's not the case. In fact, according to the classic Jewish notion, there is a group of people who entered into a covenant with God to observe the Torah, and these people and their descendants are bound to that covenant. What I would point out at this stage is that it's in other cases in life, it's hard to know who's the chicken and who's the egg. Okay, what leads to what? In this case, it seems to me and to Avi Sagi, and we would argue this strongly, that it's very clear what's the chicken and what's the egg. In other words, being part of the Jewish community entails being obligated to the covenant and not vice versa. For instance, if somebody was non-Jewish, read the Bible and came to accept the notion that the Torah is the word of God and life according to the Torah is the best life for a human being to lead, and that person sincerely with full belief starts living according to the Torah and to all the interpretations offered by the greatest Jewish sages throughout the ages, that person is unquestionably a very impressive person, a sincere person, a deeply religious person, but they're not Jewish, at least according to the ways Jewish tradition perceives this. Conversely, if somebody, okay, and they're not Jewish and they are under no obligation to follow Torah, they're doing this by choice, by conviction, by deep belief, but they are not seen, according to the Jewish tradition, as obligated in any way to follow Torah. However, let's take somebody that, and this was real-life cases, for instance, in Spain after 1492, many Jews and Jewesses are relevant to our discussion, accepted Christianity, some of them under duress, but some of them quite sincerely, because they became convinced that Christianity was the way. And then this Jewish woman who embraced Christianity had a daughter. And then she had a daughter, all of them living as Christians, born as Christians, into the Christian faith community in Spain. And the fourth generation daughter moves to Holland. And in Holland, she meets a Jewish boy. They want to get married. Does she now have to convert to Judaism? The answer is no. Okay, bearing all this in mind, what can be the meaning or the inner logic of a conversion ceremony? And here I would like to relate to the second group of texts. What I'm going to try to offer, basing myself on various quotations from Jewish halachic texts, is an interpretation of the conversion procedure and the logic of conversion, taking into account the points that I mentioned. Yes, please. Yes. Yes. Well, first of all, this was discussed in the response. They would not have been asked by the rabbis in Amsterdam. They might have been asked by the rabbis today. Okay, in that, it was discussed. There were cases, people said, the person comes, a fourth generation, converso from Spain. They come now to Salonika, and they want to join the Jewish community. They are Jewish. They don't have to undergo a conversion ceremony. There's various suggestions of rites and procedures. Perhaps they will receive 40 lashes, or they will, whatever, in order to somehow expiate for having lived a non-Jewish life, not according to Torah, but there's not a, if, once again, the genealogy is obvious. Okay, if the genealogy is obvious and it's not contested, the person is really a Jew through the maternal side, for however many generations, there's no issue of giur. The concept of giula chumrah is a modern hybrid. Yes. So, in this set of texts that I've just given out, our point of departure is a Talmudic statement which is reiterated in several places in the Talmud. A proselyte who has converted is as a newborn child. Now, some of you, this may echo, for instance, notions of conversion to Christianity. I'm sure the parallel is not completely devoid of content, but what I will say is that the meaning is different. Yes. That's a very, also women converts must be immersed. All must immerse.
Right, but I mean, there is a ritual for males, certainly, for women, but then men must also be immersed.
Yes. That's a very good suggestion, which I will advocate based on text. That's what I see as a very good interpretation. But in order to reach that point, which your fine intuition is leading us to, let me go through several earlier stages of fleshing out the grounds of this notion. For instance, what does this mean, a proselyte was converted as a newborn child? This has, in halachic literature, several implications, some of them which, when we consider them, seem quite shocking. For instance, I'm quoting from Maimonides, but just because he provides very succinct, terse presentations of these issues, which are supported by other authorities also. All the proselytes' kinship ties prior to the conversion are revoked from the moment of conversion. Hence, it's almost hard to read it. The Torah allows Gentile family members who converted together to marry one another. The biological father may marry his daughter, the mother her son, a brother his sister, and so forth. Okay? We all believe that issues of incest are nature. Okay? This text very strongly presents that incest is a matter of culture. Kinship is a matter of culture. Who is kin to who? Okay? A person who was king of France in the medieval times could have tens, if not hundreds, of children. Not one of them would be appropriate for the crown unless he was married to the mother by Catholic union. Although all of these people were his natural offspring, they were, for purposes of kinship and lineage, of bastards who had no standing in the aristocracy. Okay, so there's no question that biologically, if a father and daughter converted, biologically he is the father and she is the daughter, but the kinship structure recognized by Jewish culture, and in fact underlying or implicit in the logic of